This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
An historic weekend for Ipswich Town Football Club on and off the field this weekend. Join us as we try and make sense of all of it here on the Blue Monday podcast. Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast, discussing the town up or down. Since 2015, I'm Rich Woodward, and welcome to the flagship show brought to you in partnership with our friends at Innovation Labs. We go live every Sunday at 8 p.m. on YouTube to talk all things Ipswich Town, but if you prefer, you can watch and listen on demand afterwards. Joining me to talk through all of this unprecedented news, Dave Diamond, Joe Fares. Joe, we'll start with you. Because we want to talk ITFC women off the top, and then we're going to try and make sense of all of this financial stuff that is far too clever for me, which is why you guys are here and I'm not in the I'm in the contributor seat. But Joe, you were at Wembley yesterday, weren't you? 80,000 odd other people, and feeling any better about the Euros now?
It's a difficult one because you're missing a few players, and it wasn't the greatest game. Truth be told, it was a little bit. I'd say you miss Harry Kane. Your four first-choice fullbacks muster 12 minutes between them with those missing, and it just sort of fell apart a little bit. But it was a decent test. I think I'm hopeful Southgate learned a few things. I'm still positive going into the Euros. I think it's sort of us or France are the best teams, and one of us will win the trophy, but it's just trying to get the right side of the draw, trying to get a bit of luck as and when you need it. But no, we're a good side. It's just making sure you get your best players fit and out on the pitch in the summer, isn't it?
It's no different to any other kind of game of football. Get your best 11 out there. An enjoyable trip down to Wembley as well, Joe?
Yeah, headed down early, took the boys. So Teddy'd been there before, but my youngest, it was his first time there. So with them,
Wow.
We managed to get down there early and just go around the mall, have a bit of the outlet mall, they call it there, isn't it? And have a bit of dinner and head in. And no, it's really good experience. We were sort of in the singers part of the ground though. So okay. It didn't mean that they had to stand on their chair for the whole game, and with a 7 o'clock kickoff probably was a little bit much for them by the end of it, but they were asleep before we'd almost got out of Wembley driving home, so at least I got some peace and quiet on the way home.
Nice stuff. Well, talking to people who A, didn't get any peace and quiet yesterday afternoon, and B, were in the singing section, David Diamond, do you want to talk to us about your Saturday afternoon?
Yeah, I mean, it was good. Obviously, it was the first ITFC ladies game at Portman Road against Chatham. Incredibly superb, over 10,000, I think, just a shade over 10,000 tickets sold. And yeah, the drummers and the hardcore of the AGL, Felix Stowe support were there in force yesterday. And yeah, I've got to say, I've been down to Felix Stowe several times this season, but yeah, really really enjoyable afternoon. Brilliant for the ladies, brilliant for the club really, and also crikey for Chatham as well. How good was that when they found that one out? So. Yeah, all good. And it was the full, I mean, we got there about half an hour before, didn't we, Rich? And it was the full match day experience for them, really, wasn't it?
Brilliant. It was. Faithless on the way out, and yeah, everything in between. So yeah, congratulations to the club.
Yeah,
put a lot of effort in, and that gate, Dave. I mean, we talked about the significance of 10,000 in the isolation of what it means for the women's team, but I don't think, apart from maybe England and two other games in the
I think probably
West Ham and another WSL Championship teams played today wouldn't have beaten that 10,000 gate. So in the grand scheme of things, that number is just immense. But we'll talk about kind of what it means.
Rich, not only that, you don't really have to go back that many seasons where it wasn't, you know what I'm going to say there? It wasn't more than that for a first team men's game. So to be applauded, I think.
Maybe more about that later on. Just wanted to jump in the comments. We are live, so we will come to the comments, get your thoughts, questions on ITFC Women, investment, and anything else. Plenty of time to go through Q&A. But Romeo, hi all. My first ITFC Women's game yesterday. Impressive performance by Town. Enjoyed it. Rob really enjoyed yesterday. More importantly, it's motivated his daughter, who only wants to wear blue and white. Love that stuff. And Colin was there as well, saw the ITFC flag behind the goal. That was at Wembley, presumably, but there's lots of flags at Portman Road yesterday as well. Streaky, who won our ticket giveaway. Cracking day at Portman Road yesterday. Thank you to the BM team for the tickets. I mean, in terms of the match action, Dave, we'll quickly just deal with that. I mean, two bits of team news that are kind of interesting and relevant for us, certainly. Lucy O'Brien, we talked to her midweek. She got a start. And I guess good news for friends of the podcast, as it were. And Eloise King made her first, I think she was named in the squad for the first time this season, but even better than that, Dave.
Yeah, it was superb, wasn't it? Chris and Tracy, her parents, a long time, obviously, you know, pod listeners and pod supporters. And when she's been out of the side, which has been pretty much all this season, they've been there supporting, haven't they? And they were there yesterday. It was quite funny because it got to only really noticed the warming up from about 75 minutes onwards, perhaps you did before, didn't see it. And you could see, they were looking over, has she got the call? We all were, really, has she got the call? And once there was a sort of false alarm, she went back and sat down, but yeah, got on the pitch, I think 85th minute. So absolutely brilliant for them all, really. And you see what it meant to them at the end, to the whole family at the end. That was a sort of really nice moment, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. And got to do a fist pump as well. We know that, like Harry Clark, she's kind of passed, taken the mantle off from Luke Chambers. And the goals, Dave, really tidy, weren't they? Two at our end, sadly three at the opposite end. But really, of course, no one else was going to score the first one apart from Natasha Thomas.
No, and that was a good goal, wasn't it? She cuts in a bit on a sort of wide sort of left of the penalty. Yeah, a really good finish, actually. Sort of you think the chance is almost gone, or it's almost going to lead to a cross, and you saw hammers one in the near post, in the roof of the net off the near post. And as expected, I think the ladies sort of pretty much dominated possession, really. Had a couple of useful front players, didn't they? Charles was it, I think, was one of them. Really, really good. So what was it, 3-0 at half time? They hit the bar just before half time, which would have made it interesting. I mean, the other two. Second goal was an interesting goal. Sophie Peskett, wasn't it, who came off the right, and it was basically when we got there watching them warm up, that was basically, she must have done that four or five times, carbon copy shot across the keeper in the warm up from that, you know, just inside the box as well. So that was a pleasing finish. But I haven't seen it back, and it was the other end from us on Town in five. But the fourth goal was a bit special, wasn't it, where
Friday.
The left back Summer Hughes on that. Well, Joe pointed out how he watched it back. It starts with one of the centre halves playing it out, and Summer Hughes.
It's the keeper first, isn't it? Playing the flaky role on the halfway line, isn't it?
It's a typical Town goal. Summer Hughes, the left back, who I think is one of whenever I've seen her play, is always very consistent. She's a great little player. Comes in off the left, sort of drives into the box. It's a lovely touch by Natasha Thomas, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then Gunning Williams, the right foot, sort of curling finish. It was a really, 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 really nice goal. And then Summer Hughes got the fifth to sort of cap it all off. So I think, yeah, a comfortable enough win. I know it was several people in the pub beforehand sort of predicting 4-5-0. That's good for Chatham. They weren't totally blown away, you know, which, you know, possession-wise on the day and one or two chances. Their keeper had a half-decent game, I thought, as well, didn't she? She did really well. So, But I've just seen one or two comments about the best player. I thought Robertson. Is it Kira Robertson in Kira Robertson in midfield?
Well, Daniel says it. Really enjoyable day, a tremendous day for the club as a whole.
Oh, sorry.
Kira Robertson. Yeah, no. It's perfect timing from Daniel. Kira Robertson, class above Sam Morsy-esque performance. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely superb yesterday. Ball carrying, winning the ball, carrying. Very, very, he's right. Morsy-esque, absolutely right. But just a great, enjoyable day all round, really.
Yeah, I don't know why my camera's gone all weird, but we'll continue nevertheless. I've got a kind of a weird glow about me, but that's probably because I've been drumming and singing and having all kinds of fun at Portman Road yesterday.
And just going back, did one of you say that Natasha Thomas scored two yesterday? She's nearing 150?
Yeah, 150 is coming close. So she's already surpassed the 200 appearances. Only the third player to do that. I think we talked about that on the pod a few weeks back, but now is, near. I think she's two off now, 150 wow. goals for the club. So fantastic stuff. And everyone put in fantastic performances. Everyone, I think, enjoyed themselves. Good to see some men's staff. JG putting here, Martin Pert on the pitch pre-match supporting Joe, and Sharon also echoing support for Joe
just,
as well.
I think so. Just quickly, I'll mention, and I didn't catch her name, either. You may have done, a bit of a shout out. I didn't quite realise for the Chatham player because she went down in the first 10 minutes and apparently really bad cut to her head. We couldn't see it obviously where we were from, but she, whether it was a sort of she went off with a concussion, obviously
she did, yeah, with Lucy actually, yeah
she did. So apparently she had to I think I read somewhere she had to go to hospital with that, so hope all okay there.
Yeah, we wish her well. I think her first name's Lenny, but I can't remember her surname.
I should have checked. Terrible.
But yeah, Romeo, you could see McKenna stamp all over the performance. Definite parallels with the men's team stylistically. I mean, noting where we're going to next, Joe, I mean, in terms of the style of play, the identity, it was very much in evidence at Portman Road on Saturday. But that culture, it seems like, pervades every team, including the academy guys as well. We have a standard way of playing, a pattern to what we do, and it's consistent, isn't it? And it's also working too.
Yeah, and I'm sure the sort of women's team were happy to be playing on the sort of carpet at Portman Road yesterday, because I've been down to the AGL a couple of times this season and they're trying to play out from the back, and it can be really difficult. And sort of to give them their dues, they do persist with it, and the keepers try and play out there, and sometimes it might lead to a mistake, but they're trying to do the right things and keep doing the right things there. So it's really positive when you see sort of a team of an average age of 20 years and 4 months old, and they're really pushing. So you're just hoping that they can keep progressing, hopefully that they can get onto a pitch with sort of a better surface more consistently so that they can show off their football, as evidenced by the fourth goal yesterday with a sort of lovely sort of back here by Natasha Thomas at the end and a great finish.
Yeah, who may or may not be here. I'm pretty well. Thank you for the Blue Army anyway, whoever you are. If it is Natasha Thomas, then brilliant. But I'm maybe not a good alias and a homage to the GOAT, as we call her at the AGL. Let's move things forwards and talk about takeover stuff. I've got, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do the basics because I'm basic and simple. So I'm going to lay out some bits and pieces and then essentially bring your questions, folks, because we want to make sense of this. I think we'll start with Joe and kind of get Joe's take on things. But let me just explain what's happened first. Let's start with this one. So apologies covering everyone's faces up for now. So Bright Passports Partners, a US-based private equity firm, have invested £105 million in the club, securing them a 40% stake. They'll be represented by co-founders Jake Zano and Philip Ciano. And their investment also comprised several limited partners. And I'm sure that means something for accountants out there, but I suspect it means they put money in but don't have a huge amount of say, of which Sam Simon, the founder of Simon Group Holdings and Simon Sports, is the primary funder. ORG, headed by Ed Schwartz, who we all know, remains the majority and controlling shareholder in the club with their circa 50% holding. The remaining 10 is made up of smaller investors, including the three Lions. And then finally, in terms of how things work and who's doing what, so CEO Mark Ashton continues to manage day-to-day running of the club. Ed Schwartz, and I think to a lot of our Telegram members, a lot of reassurance provided by Chairman Mike O'Leary, continuing in his role as along with Chief Financial Officer Tom Ball. They continue as board members of Game Changer and the football club. Bright Passports will provide capital and strategic thinking, which will be of significant benefit to the club, quote, that their new investment sees changes at board level. This includes Sam Simon and Jake Zano joining the board of Game Changer, as does Mark Ashton as well. And Chief Operating Officer Luke Wareham will join the boards of both Game Changer and the football club. So we've dealt with the facts, a few figures, a few changes to personnel. I guess first and foremost, Joe, give me your overriding emotions and thoughts around the announcement as in when it broke on Friday.
I think for me, if you just try and keep it simple, and I know there's a lot going on behind the scenes, so the first thing is the little bit of reticence, like you get sort of US private equity money into the club, which is generally, well, we've got US money in the club, it's like a pension fund, which is long-term returns. We know the people that have put that in now, but we didn't at the time it came in. And now you've got this sort of private equity that is probably going to be wanting a quicker return on their money, would probably be true to say. But then on the flip side, for me, just looking at it as a fan, which sometimes you just want to be, they're talking about going to a Category 1 academy, which is something I've wanted from the very start, which is fantastic news. They're talking about, I think they basically say 4 to 5 years. Effectively, we've got the capital to run ourselves the next 4 to 5 years. So effectively, in the last two seasons, Game Changer have bought some more shares. They're putting £15 million to keep the running costs and those sort of figures. And now we've basically got this money. I'm sure it's not just sitting there in an account for us to dip into it as we want, but we've got agreements to take parts of that money as and when we need them. We know there's a training ground project going, sort of about to be announced or has been announced, but maybe not the details yet. Maybe when you watch the video on Town TV, you see the players being presented about the training ground and the full details on that. So yeah, on that side of it, it's just really positive. The training ground is going to be a state-of-the-art training ground. Sort of when you look at what Mark Ashton did at Bristol City previously, when you look at some of the other ones about there, you've got that. You've got the academy going up and you know we've got no funding issues for the next 4 to 5 years, as opposed to, it's sort of like a business, isn't it? Cash flow versus solvency. We've got the cash flow in place now, which is great. So yeah, and I say to sort of link back to the women's team as well previously, well, if we're building this training ground, this facility, and we're going to Cat 1, there's going to need to be a show pitch there, which will have seating, which will have capacity there, which will be a perfect pitch like we've wanted. And maybe that could be a new home for them in addition to sort of the under-21s team and the under-18s team for the bigger games. And yeah, we're just, everything at the moment is pointing us back to where we want to be as a club, which is back at the sort of in the Premier League, effectively, and maybe a Premier League or a parachute team and somewhere in that range. And like I say, you've got all that stuff sorted, and it's really exciting news on that side of it.
Yeah, Dave, I wanted to see whether your thoughts chime with that as well. Mark here saying, so exciting to be an Ipswich fan. Trevor, thank heavens Marcus Evans sold up. I mean, he's still involved, I think. Sold the majority stake, didn't he? But still, I think one of those minority shareholders that comprise the 10% ownership I was talking about. I mean, worth rewinding, because we always talk about this rapid progression, certainly on the field, but off the field, you rewind 3 years. This time 3 years ago, there was stuff in the background that maybe some folk were aware of, but most of us weren't. And we just lost actually to Portsmouth 2-1, Paul Cook versus Danny Cowley. I think Marcus Harness might have scored the winner in that game. And things looked very hopeless at that point, didn't they? And you fast forward 3 years, obviously we are, 3 years-ish into the Game Changer era. And now even more capital has been injected. I mean, very simply, this feels like I'm just crazy times for this football club, isn't it?
It just feels like we're sort of, with the last, we've been in a parallel universe, really, doesn't it? Because we were honestly.
Is this a COVID side effect or something? Do you know what I mean?
Did I read somewhere? I was reading somewhere yesterday about Bristol City being the most boring club in the EFL.
Well,
I'm pretty certain it was us, wasn't it? Really, was us, literally. Three, four years ago. And it's just incredible the rate this has happened. I mean, everything's just on the upside, isn't it? It is absolutely incredible. And as Joe quite rightly said, and Joe, haven't we been an advocate for Category 1, Category 1 Academy. And it's just brilliant that now that hopefully that will be coming to fruition now. And it's important for attracting the right, the right players to come in. So yeah, it's just such a transformation in just such a short It is a relatively short space of time. No one could have foreseen this, I don't think. Not really.
No. I mean, in terms of... God.
It's a lot more pressure as well, though, isn't it? That's
it is. It comes
for me
that.
In that, like when you look at the sort of the investment that we've had from sort of Game Changer 20 previously and the deal that's in place, effectively they'd bought the club for 40 million or 40 million. They'd spent probably the same again on it, and we knew it was worth a lot more than that at the moment. But I don't think we expected it to be worth. I know it says the figure is up to 105 million for 40%. So how that works, is that reliant on promotion? We don't know. But we now know that the sort of Game Changer guys, rather than just sit on their hands and, oh, we've made money on this so far and we can keep pushing it at our pace, now have effectively tried to bring someone in to bring the rocket boosters to keep pushing on with that. And does obviously that means that there is more pressure on getting things right now, isn't there? We aren't going to be able to just, oh, we'll turn into, like you say, Bristol City or Preston North End in the Championship now, are we? We are going to have to keep pushing for promotion and we're going to have to make sure Kieran McKenna stays at Portman Road. And I'm sure he'd have been all around this. And we have to trust Mark Ashton and the ownership group, because they've done everything they said they would so far, and they're still retaining overall control. And it's still Mark Ashton who's getting the business plan sorted and in agreement with those guys. And he's sort of done a faultless job so far.
Yeah, I think that's most important. And people mentioned, you alluded to it, Rich, didn't you, on the statement about Mike O'Leary. You know, people on the Telegram group have mentioned him. Just a real steady hand on the sort of rudder, really. Both of them, you know, are still going to be there running the show from day to day, which I think is really important.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth... I mean, clearly we are here to give our views and opinions, and we respect folk who've got different views on this as well. You know, anytime there's a change to something that people love and hold dear, there's always a little bit of concern as well. And obviously in finance and investment, there is always risk. There are always companies that are motivated in different ways. And so a few of the folk, and I'll give them the courtesy of putting these views out there. Paul states, you know, private equity firms don't always have the best of reputations generally. It seems like Brightpath are certainly minority shareholders. And it seems like Joe not necessarily having a strong stake, but the club are clearly dependent on them in terms of capital. And it seems that there's some strategic alignment there as well. It's worth noting that Simon Sports, have got Fireside, which is a streaming community platform. They've got an interest in, they might own, in fact, the Halifax Mooseheads, hockey news website, golf mind and body training app. I mean, there is expertise they bring to the table, but as we've kind of alluded to, you don't invest for free or to be nice, do you?
No, and this is where the money is, isn't it? It is private equity, and it is dog eat dog, and it is ruthless, and we are going to need to make returns on what we say we are going to do, and they're in this to make money, and they might think they've got expertise, but really they're money providers at the moment, aren't they? And if we need their expertise, we might try and find it. But it's going to be an interesting turn, isn't it? And as with anything, you can't... we were all mega excited about the takeover, and I think we were right to be there. And now it's just a case of, well, you've got to trust the guys in place, but yeah, you don't really want to get on the wrong side of private equity and giving bigger stakes up. But I say you've got to trust the guys that have put you there so far, because they've done everything right up to this point.
It's crazy, isn't it?
And just as a plug for the Telegram group, there's been some brilliant chat on this in there. A few guys in the comments, Nick in the comments, who's in it tonight, has been really informative on that, and there's been some real good back and forth, and then a real attempt to understand it. And the video from the club is excellent. But yeah, we've sort of seemed to, as a community, and they have been able to really sort of get some real clarity on answers in there, without no one saying this is exactly what's going to happen. It's all just discussion around it.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. I kind of skipped to the end of the video a little bit on Friday, because Joe was threatening to take us all live, folks, and I was like, I'm not ready to do it. But I found it really interesting that Mark Ashton said that we've been really transparent and open about this, and obviously a 45-minute interview on Telegram, Town TV, because we know that our supporters are very, you know, forensic and drill into the detail and got access to companies' house and all that kind of stuff. So they obviously know that we're not, you know, we know what to do, what we're doing. And I'd definitely advocate Joe's advert for Telegram. The pie charts were on display this afternoon, weren't they, guys? When the pie charts are getting drawn.
Drawn pie charts, you know.
Yeah. Joe just wanted to go live Friday to get his Uncle Sam outfit back on. That's what he's really after. I mean, what I was going to say is, I mean, these people, four to five seasons to return. I mean, if we maintain that current trajectory, I'll be Champions League by then.
He's got it.
For
those listening on podcast, Joe Fares has got his barbecue bib out. Is it a bib or a bit of a chef?
It was from
thingy, isn't it?
It was from like the Big Easy or somewhere like that, where you're eating a messy dinner.
Lobster.
I'll have to create a playlist of all of our takeover videos and live reactions. Who'd have thought that this podcast would talk about any off-field stuff? But here we are covering all of that stuff. Do get your questions and thoughts in. We've got plenty of time for those. If you want to talk ITFC women, if you want to talk Bright Path or anything else, obviously it's a break in terms of the men's action, but we are coming back on Friday with Blackburn. There are players in international duty, and think Jeremy Sarmiento might be playing as we record against Italy, I think, for Ecuador. And then obviously the Kiefer Moore and Nathan Broadhead, I think, in action on Tuesday night. Is it a playoff for them against Poland?
Yeah, it is the actual playoff now. Yeah, so they had semi. So in this international break, there's three sets, but there's three semis and three finals, or six semis and three finals. Yeah, so in their path, they've beat Estonia, was it on, or Finland, they beat on Thursday night, and then they play Poland on Tuesday night. Both of those games will be at the Cardiff City Stadium. Kiefer Moore was a sub, and Nathan Broadhead was a very late sub in the first leg. So we'll see how they line up for this one. But a big opportunity for Wales to get to the Euros.
Yes.
Just quickly, I'm talking about international football. Did you see the 6-second goal from Denmark?
Not yet.
It was in Austria, was it?
Was that Austria?
Yeah, I haven't actually seen it yet.
But... Sorry, well, you were right. It was Austria. Boom, boom, Garten. It was Austria, yeah. 6 seconds from the kickoff. Ridiculous. There's something wrong about it.
It feels like something we might do, doesn't it? Don't be that team, do you?
To link from that on the Wales game, a few people have noted in the comments about Wes Burns' Instagram post. It looks like it's obviously a little bit cryptic, as people are like to do on social media, but it's basically saying a setback, I'll be back, effectively. So I think if you were to make a guess of what that means, it probably means his season is over. If it is really a real shame, but I think as soon as he pulled up, that's what everyone's instant reaction was on that.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I mean, should we deal with that now? A few people have kind of mentioned it, as you say, in the chat, and it kind of says, we all suffer big tests and I'll come back strong and all that kind of stuff. I guess the good thing is we've got Amari Hutchinson in form. Hopefully the injury to Connor Chapman that kept him out of Sheffield Wednesday isn't too serious as well. But Dave, as always, like Caden Jackson is, if we can talk about I'll be back, Arnold Schwarzenegger impression, it's blooming Caden Jackson, isn't it?
Well, we said it, didn't we, on the pod last week, I think, and look, McKenna's like that. It would very much, I think, be clearly, I think he's, I think, as Joe said, he's possibly, that means he's out for the rest of the season. And I think it'll be horses for courses. So some games, no doubt, it'll be Jackson. Other games, maybe if Chaplin's back, it'll be Hutchinson shunted outright, but Hutchinson playing outright. Well, only because he was so good. Only because he was so good last week. But yeah, so, this could be a big, big few weeks for Caden Jackson. An unexpectedly big few weeks for Caden Jackson. Amazing.
Indeed, yeah. Talking about other wingers, Elliot is keeping an eye on what's going on with Jeremy Sarmiento. Italy are 1-0 up. Sarmiento with 3 out of 3 accurate passes after 20 minutes, though 6.3 rating according to FootMob. Hashtag Telegram style analysis. That's what we want, Elliot. Keep the stats coming. We were keeping an eye on, I kind of checked into Ben's live stream for the England game last night. We were keeping a look on Paqueta's foul count, Joe. I think he was...
It was ludicrous. He had 5 fouls before he got booked, and then he just, after that, still just took Bellingham down from behind. And the other guy, João Gomez, he had 5 fouls without getting booked. The first half, it was just, pulling your hair out. Bellingham got booked for his first foul, didn't he?
Yeah.
Paqueta was quite lucky to stay on.
But again, according to, you know, as per Elliot's kind of point there, football had him as their highest rated player. I think because he had a chance, didn't he? They created quite a few chances in the first half. I think he had one of them. So we're gonna hear from our partners at Innovation Labs, and then we're gonna start answering some of your questions. So we'll be back shortly. If you want to get your question in, stick a queue at the start. Helps me because I said at the start, I'm a bit stupid just pressing buttons. So stick a queue at the start. That will help me in a question mark at the end. But here's some information on our partners, Innovation Labs.
Innovation Labs, providing co-working and innovation hubs across East Anglia. We're the perfect place for remote workers, freelancers, startups, or innovators to do business. Our unique member network creates extensive business development and collaboration opportunities. Hot desks are available from £20 a day or £99 per month, with business coaching also available from £50. Innovation Labs, turning your ideas into multi-million pound businesses. Located in Stowmarket, Ipswich, Sudbury, with new sites in Thetford, Norwich and Kuala Lumpur. Opening soon.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Whether you need a VPN to protect your world online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Professionalism is, and that is what you want, and that's why Mikey Penny-Smith is on our voiceovers as well. So thank you, Mikey. And if you're listening on the podcast, you might just be able to make out Craig Fimbo talking about NordVPN. We will sort that out. It's a little bit quiet, but NordVPN, another partner we've got, there's a link in the description whether you're watching or listening. Get yourself a VPN and do lots of stuff with the internet, but do it safely, courtesy of NordVPN. 30-day money-back guarantee. If you sign up with our link, a bit of a referral kickback for us, but you get a discount too. So everybody hopefully wins. We'll do some more plugs about what shows we've got coming up later in the week, but we'll do that a bit later on. Let's do some questions. Lee, Early Doors asked, are there any more women's games planned for Portman Road this season? I'm happy to take this one. As it stands, I suspect not. There's only, I think, 4 home games left, I think, of this campaign. And a lot of effort obviously went into hosting on Saturday. It wouldn't surprise me if there's maybe we had a double header at AFC Wimbledon, didn't we, away with the men's and the women's team playing in pre-season. I wouldn't be surprised if that is a thought that the club is having, but at the moment for this season, I think that's it. But Mark Ashton, as Joe mentioned at the start, definitely mentioned the plan is to do more. So a 10,000 gate makes that even more likely, but not probably this season. Lee, and also Nick, really impressed with how Town campaigned the women's game yesterday. What the club do next to engage with those who attended yesterday seems super important. Yeah, big, isn't it, Dave? Because you sat there at the AGL on a cold Sunday afternoon in Felix, though it'd be great if, you know, even if 1%, 10% of that the new crowd that went yesterday came along.
Yeah, and you'd think there would be. You'd think there was sufficient interest there. And I've seen several comments in our, you know, in the Telegram group where, you know, there were first time supporters there. So yeah, you would think that would spill over to Felixstowe. But one word of warning: whatever time of year it is, wear a big coat. That's all I say.
It's a bit windy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit windy off the North Sea at Felixstowe. That's for sure.
Yeah,
it's a very different experience, isn't it? The women's game to the men's games in the stadiums, and you see it with the WSL games there. I think it's a much easier environment to take children to because it is just go there, watch the game, have a bit of a sing song, clap the goals, that sort of thing, as opposed to the real edge that can come into men's football at times where it can be nasty. I'm at the England game last night and I've got two kids with me and there's people effing and blinding all around me, everything there. And that is something you have to deal with, which isn't so much in that side of the game. And we're in which is a fantastic position at the moment of effectively, you can't get tickets to the men's games at the moment, can you? The home games are sold out. And if every single game is sold out and you want children to be getting a look at it, and you see on the Town in Fire video at the end of the game, the kids there were having photos with sort of Natasha Thomas and Maria Boswell and people like that. And they don't know any, I'm not saying they don't know any different, but effectively they are watching an Ipswich Town team on Portman Road pitch. There's 10,000 people there. They're getting to have a selfie with the players afterwards. And it's just massive for them to be able to do that, isn't it? So really, really key to move on to that and try and introduce people to a different part of Ipswich Town Football Club that may then lead them. That could be an entrance to the men's team support as well, rather than being the men's introduction to the women's. That can work both ways too.
No, exactly.
And also fair play to the girls yesterday. There were loads of them afterwards, probably 20 minutes afterwards, still signing autographs and having selfies along in front of the Cobbold stand, wasn't there?
Yeah. ITFC women are away next weekend, by the way, at Rugby Borough. If you want to get involved in that, if you're local to the Midlands and want to head down there on Easter Sunday, ITFC WSC, the Women's Official Sports Club, they arrange travel, but they'll have all the details you need. And obviously the club will tweet about tickets and access and all that kind of stuff. Back home on the 7th of April. I'm not sure there's a game there won't be a game in between. So 7th of April at home to MK Dons. And I can guarantee you, well, I can't guarantee you this because I might give the drum to someone else, but there'll be at least one less drum. So if the drum isn't your favourite kind of thing, then there'll be 50% less drum on the 7th of April, because sadly I can't make that game. But do get down to the AGL. It's the same team trying to play the same football, obviously different surroundings. Felixstowe, great hosts. And what's not to like about going to Felixstowe?
I'm sure drum number two will more than make up for it.
It will. Andreas, stuck this in early, Joe, and I thought because you prepped for this, why not chuck you in front of Andreas and everyone watching? Too bad that Ben isn't on the panel tonight, as I have questions about Jammy Ipswich and why he thinks the playoffs are a lottery. But Ben has also done a clip on a Leicester podcast today that someone else has mentioned about Leicester was involved in Leicester fans, wasn't he? Do you want to talk about this FFP situation with Leicester and try and navigate us through this, because I guess in terms of the promotion race, this could be really important, couldn't it?
Yeah, well, if you look at it just on the sort of bare facts of it at the moment, where when you look in the Premier League and you see what's happened to Nottingham Forest and Everton, where they've had points deductions for breaking the PRS requirements of profit and sustainability requirements, Leicester have effectively broken those rules at the same time. So if they were in the Premier League this season, they would be getting a points deduction, or they'd been in the same process as especially Forest, where they've had seasons at both levels. But here's the big but, which is saving them at the moment. The Premier League agreed, all the clubs agreed that each team would file their accounts by sort of the 1st of January, and all punishments for breaking the rules would be applied in this season. So they would be there. But Leicester have been relegated, and the EFL and the Premier League haven't got the same rules together. So there's nothing from the Premier League rules. So where everyone's agreed, you've got to get it in by January and we'll deal with it this season. The EFL are still saying you've got to get it in by March. We'll deal with it when we deal with it. So Leicester have effectively made a statement to say they are playing by the rules that they were given, even though they've flouted the rules last season. They're not putting their accounts in yet this season. They're putting them in late, and they're not going to get a points deduction this season. It's just not going to happen. They, if they get promoted, they will get one in the Premier League next season. Yeah. They've broken the rules. there may be a way that the EFL and the Premier League get together to give them one in the EFL this season. But it's just a bit of a joke, really, isn't it? That you can, if they're in one league, they'd be getting punished. And because they're not. And the EFL has obviously had a number of issues with this over the past, like the way Derby, how they went with FFP, which resulted in, I don't know whether it's Mel Morris himself or Derby getting sued by Middlesbrough and Wickham. And I think they lost court cases on that with regards to and yeah, we're in a position where effectively Leicester have sort of flouted the rules last year, broken the rules, and are not going to get punished for it this season. And they can still, and I'm sure they're breaking the rules again this season with the EFL, FFP calculations, but there's nothing that can be done about it. And they can get promoted and they can be getting a £200 million reward for...
It's bureaucracy that's failed, isn't it, really? I
mean, it is playing the system, aren't they? They're coming out fighting with it, but ultimately they know that they're sort of... They're falling between two horses or between two stools here.
It's a grey area, isn't it, that they're exploiting?
Driving a tank through that that area that they've been given, but ultimately you've got to do what you've got to do, don't you? There's no, I'm sure they've got legal advice and they know they're on the right side of it. They will keep going, but it's very frustrating for us. But you look at the Premier League, the teams that finished last year, sort of 16th, 17th place, Nottingham Forest and Everton, who both were breaking the rules. Leicester got relegated, who were breaking the rules, and Leeds and Southampton must feel even more aggrieved that they were relegated when they had teams in that league who were effectively breaking the rules. But I don't know, FFP, PNS, there's a lot of criticism. There's a lot of things it's trying to do. I do have sympathy as a fan for Everton fans, Forest fans, Leicester fans, because ultimately they're spending money that they had. They just were spending too much. The way the calendars fell, maybe fell out with there, but it's very much protectionism from the big clubs and the leagues to try and do themselves. Leicester had four or five brilliant seasons, had a couple of bad summers, a couple of bad transfer windows, end up relegated. And then it could almost be, if the rules were applied to the letter of the law straight down, it could be something that just kills the club when they've invested so much and continue to do so. And they've had good owners who have done that. So to sort of play devil's advocate on both sides of it is, I'm not one that really wants to see big points deduction for fines. No. I think it's something that needs to try and be managed in real time with business plans and the like.
Yeah. Forest were the ones that got me, really, because it was a Brennan Johnson transfer, and that was all down to timing, really.
It's hypothetical,
wasn't it?
Yeah, odd one.
I mean, Leicester, you're talking about, I think I read earlier something like in the year up to 2022, lost 90 odd million. And I think the rule is, Joe would know this, is something like 100 million or 100 odd million over
105,
three seasons.
I think it's 105 million over three
seasons. I mean, yeah, but they, you know, obviously, they, as you're right, they're caught between the EFL and the Premier League and the EFL stools, aren't they? So they're obviously going to, I think they're appealing, obviously, two appeals on both fronts. So, yeah, that's just going to run.
And it's interesting.
It's not going to happen this season, is it?
No, it can't happen this season, so it won't. But they are now under an embargo from the EFL. But when you look at our accounts, we have specifically put in there what our FFP calculations are, which is interesting. I've not seen that in any other team's accounts, so... Mm. We are showing exactly what we've spent on the sort of non-football activities, investment into the ground, the women's team, the youth academy, the things that don't count against it. But we lost £18 million getting promoted from League One last season. So the finances in football are crazy and the rules are a little bit, I don't know, you just got to try and get things looking right when the music stops at your end of your financial years, don't you?
Well, and this is it. I mean, I didn't realise that, again, I read this earlier, that Leicester played something like a £3.5 million fine going back to their, this is 2018, I think they paid it, going back to their, when they came out of the championship in 2013. So 5 years. Yeah, it's Yeah, I mean, you look. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the Premier League this season with the points deduction so far and where they all, where they all finish. But I mean,
and it's funny with like you're saying about how it affects them mentally. Is this going to be the thing that inspires them to?
Well,
yeah, against adverse, the yes, odds, everyone's against us, all that.
Yeah, this could work very much as very much us against them siege mentality.
Zorak also asked Leeds, Ipswich and Southampton should protest or something. There's a naughty word that I didn't see there, so apologies for putting it on the screen. Maybe that's the, I don't know, Brightpath might have that strategic expertise in their wheelhouse. Maybe the Capital's going to go on some lawyers.
It's funny when you go back, again, football just repeats itself. When we got relegated from the Premier League, we were relegated at the same time as Leicester. There's a couple of comments in there from sort of Lee Cruncher about the administration. We went into administration where we tried to pay off
and we did
stitch up local businesses and St John's Ambulance and the like, and it's sort of a sad day in the club's history when it did that, but we tried to go into administration properly and pay the 10-15%, where Leicester just totally shut it down, started a new company in the same name, paid nothing to nobody, and then came out of it in a much better position than we did, because we had these agreements that we had to meet to sell players, and they went straight back up to the Premier League, where we are still waiting 20 odd years later. So funny that it's the same two clubs, isn't it?
Football's got nice symmetries like that, hasn't it? Let me see if I can try and find something related. I mean, let's talk about money. I think you might have mentioned this one already, Joe, but HCH talks about the Brightpath investment up to 105. Doesn't sound guaranteed, he says. Your thoughts? Are we getting a lot? Do we know much about that?
They have said this money will sort of capitalise the club 4 to 5 years. So if you think we lost £80 million last year, that is £80 million of money that needs to be found. And I don't think these losses are going to be going down in the Championship. So we need about £20 million a year just to run effectively. So it does seem that that is all the money that we will need if what they say is 105 million is being brought in, there's 4 to 5 years of capitalisation in that, then that probably is going to be all there. But I guess it's just how that valuation works. Do we need to get promoted? Is there a time scale in that to be promoted to get the full whack of it, or does it there? But these are commercial details that some secret squirrel might be able to find out looking through company's house and the like, but not
to Telegram. Reading Tractor asks, I assume the maths is right here. Apologies if I'm wrong on behalf of Reading Tractor. If we're now worth 256 million, I think that's the kind of situation with the monies that have been spent to fund both the takeover and now the investment by Brightpath. Where does that put us in terms of clubs in England? Surely that must be easily in the top 20. I mean, it's interesting, Dave, isn't it? From an ORG perspective, you want kind of, I think Ed Schwartz says they're not taking money out at the moment as ORG, but you essentially, the value of their estimate has gone from 40 million, to whatever, if it is 256 as per Reading Tractor. I mean, that, even if you're not taking dividends or what have you, knowing that you've got an asset that was worth 40 million quid is now worth, you know,
it's kind of comforting. It's comforting, isn't it? Yeah, it really is.
Hopefully the Arizona Pension Fund takes, appreciates that. But in terms of that, you know, the thought that Reading Tractor has there, I mean, even more generally, without quoting figures, that valuation is really significant in terms of the stature of the club, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you'd think that's a Premier League valuation, isn't it? Well, certainly lower half Premier League valuation, Joe, I would imagine so, yeah. Must be, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd say so on that. It's just, is that what we are actually valued at the moment? Without knowing the full ins and outs of the deal.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, then, up to 105.
There's potential.
Then we don't know.
Well.
But these American investors are so keen on English football because the cost of business in America is so high. If you want an MLS club, you're literally talking £1 billion to get an MLS club. And even the USL, which is a division where, like I say, I know we've seen like Phoenix Rising as they're linked with the owners, and I've watched a bit of Detroit because Ben Morris went there, and these other teams there. And you're talking like, you're paying like $20 million just to get a sort of a franchise like opening, just an expansion opening. That's like £20 million. Then you've got to build a stadium. Then you've got to do all this for what? Like a little 2-bit league in America with 1,500 people watching the games. Like, I mean, that it's not like you're buying a team
for
the MLS.
Yeah, it's not got the international audience, is it? Yeah, and all that.
No, but if you put that, if you have $20 million to spend and you put that money into Forest Green or Colchester or something like that, that $20 million can turn you into a Championship club easily, really, couldn't it? There. So it is a, there's a lot of there's a lot more value in English sport, especially in English football, than there is in American football or American soccer, as it is over there. Because I'd say these USL does not have many eyeballs on it. It does not have many fans there. It's almost hard to see how that survives longer term, unless it can get a proper link up with the MLS. So you're paying to try and get a link up with a league that probably doesn't want you to link up to it. Where here, you get into the pyramid system, which is linked up to it, and maybe they might not want you to be linked up to it, but it is.
So, if you were in a step, pump £20 million into Colchester United, by the way, that, I mean, that maybe fixes the pitch, perhaps. I don't know, but that's my brother-in-law, that one.
You got to ask how much they invested in the Halifax Mooseheads, or whatever it was.
And the Mooseheads is a great name, isn't it? Steve, I mean, again, there's going to be different feelings and thoughts around this one. Steve, why do hard-headed, in quotes, businessmen from the States seem also nice? I mean, that's kind of the American way, isn't it, guys?
It is.
You deal with Americans in your line of work, Dave?
I certainly do. I certainly have done, and certainly still do. All
very happy, jovial people, aren't they? Everything can be done.
They really are. The vast majority of them are absolutely, as described there, all very nice.
Yeah.
And love coming over here.
But as much as we...
They smile while they shake your hand as they're taking your wallet out of your pocket.
Absolutely.
Well...
I keep
buying shirts in the sale, so it's working, isn't it? And I guess, you know, we've kind of talked about Mike O'Leary staying involved. Ed Schwartz, I think we've got a lot of time for Ed Schwartz. The Three Lions as well, still involved as well. I guess that gives a little bit of comfort, doesn't it, Dave? These are people that we now know and trust, don't we?
Did I see that also up their investment also, yeah. I think I read as well. So, yeah, that's all good from a continuity point of view, isn't it?
Yeah. Charlie asks, how long does a state-of-the-art training centre take to build?
Joe.
Aren't Leicester doing the same thing? Aren't they building
theirs. Theirs is incredible. It's probably one
Norwich
of the best in Europe.
Done one as well?
Norwich done theirs. Yeah, they did theirs a few years back, didn't they? But
yeah.
I think from what Mark Ashton has said, he wants to start breaking ground effectively as soon as the planning is confirmed. And I think the planning is either in or close to being in. So you'd think you'd want to get it done mostly by this time next year. It's a very different project when you are building a new training ground at a new site, because you've got to get all the pitches done as part of that. But this is just infrastructure. This is just building effectively. So, yeah, assuming you can get a decent builder. I know a couple around the area.
I was going to say, Joe, you're going to get your tender in the morning.
I mean, you're around the corner, Joe. You should be sticking.
Joe will be posting it through the letterbox.
Stick some adverts on the back of the fence, you know.
but when you're there, it is only, you're effectively building a building, aren't you? You're not having to lay pitches, do all the drainage, run all that around there, which turns a big project into an absolute monster project. Site, get the new site, get roads to it, get all the infrastructure to it. So it should be if they start it this year, you'd hope it's sort of mostly in place, or the main parts of it will be in place for the sort of start.
I can see it. Light aircraft with a banner flying over Rushmere Golf Course over Playford Road, doing a circle.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. Joe's. Follow Joe on internet. You'll figure all of that kind of stuff out very quickly. We're in the home straight. We've got more questions. We're going to deal with as many as we can, but I need to do some bits and pieces of business on behalf of the podcast, as well as Joe's company too. We are brought to you in partnership with Innovation Labs. Get them, check them out. Nord as well. Do have a listen to Nick Ames' interview, which was unfortunate timing in respect of being maybe a week late. If we'd got his views on the new investment, that would have been even better. But Nick is a resident member of our Telegram group, does check in from time to time, has given an early take on it as well. But yeah, watch back our interview with Nick, giving his take on the promotion race, the wider game. He's the European sports correspondent for The Guardian. Really interesting views on the leagues, and answered a few questions there. So do check that out. Pre-match is back. We are back in the normal routine, albeit we're kind of a day backwards because we play on Friday. Pre-match live, 8 p.m. Wednesday. Seb and I talking about Blackburn. Ben and I think Ben's lingering in the chat, are doing a live watch along of the Blackburn game, 5:30 kickoff. So do join us live for that. And then we'll be back here Sunday, 8 p.m. as always, going back over Blackburn, but also focusing on a big game against Southampton on Easter Monday. So check that out on Sunday. Merch store currently has a free delivery. So get yourself a hoodie. And we mentioned the Telegram group about a million times. So do head over there. Lots of you here tonight. Obviously, there's nothing on the telly. So great to see so many people here. Do give us a thumbs up and do subscribe as well. Plenty of content. We'll probably do some April predictions at some point as well. And we are in the run-in, essentially. I think we've officially confirmed the run has already started. So it's going to get serious now, folks. So get subscribed and get involved. And we'd love to hear from you as well. Let's get back to the chat. And I think Dave Norman's trying to cut into the point of what I think most Town fans want to see maybe as a perk of the take of the investment. Does this investment mean our chances of holding on to McKenna has significantly, his word, increased irrespective of what happens at the end of the season?
Yeah, I'd want to say I don't think it's decreased it, has it? It's certainly, I think it's probably has strengthened that somewhat. But as we say, as he's ended up there, I think a lot will depend on what happens in these next nine games. Yeah, a lot will depend on that.
Nick's views are quite interesting on that as well. So I do listen to Nick's perspective. Yeah. Not only is Nick talk about how highly he rates him, talks about the interest from maybe the level up as it is at the moment. But his views are on that as well, worth hearing that too. A few people giving their thoughts on Wes Burns. Gutted, says Romeo, big game player. And we have plenty of those coming up. Simon compares Wes as a disaster, like Leeds losing Somerville or Southampton. Adams, is it? I guess it is, isn't it? But the trouble is we've maybe got used to Burns being out for a bit of time, haven't we, guys? Joe, I mean, it does look like it's Hutchinson or Jackson notionally playing out there, isn't it? So at least the choices of what McKenna has to do are pretty straightforward.
Yeah, I wouldn't like to say disaster because I don't think anything's a disaster at this stage of the season for us. But when you look at it of these last eight games, Burns would have started six or seven of them, wouldn't he? He's your main man. He starts and it's interesting. Like Amari Hutchinson seems to have played a couple of times against Sheffield Wednesday and against Millwall in that 10 role from Connor Chaplin and has been superb in both those games where he wasn't as effective maybe when he starts in that right-hand side. I think he's really, really effective coming on the right-hand side or starting in the middle. So there's probably it wouldn't be surprising if McKenna does try and jiggle things around a bit slightly there. Maybe there's other options. Caden Jackson, a couple of people in the chat have put Harry Clark as a potential right wing. Yeah. He's
Al Hamadi, maybe.
We've seen him there before. Marcus Harness could probably play on that side.
Yeah.
But something will happen. But yeah, no, it's a massive blow losing Wes Burns because he is Mr. Dependable, big game player, comes up the big moments and the big games for us and has done since he signed.
Joe, I want to stay. Well, go on, Dave.
No, I think Joe's right. It has started every game. If he'd remain fit, he'd have started all these games without.
And that pace is a threat, as we know.
He's just direct, isn't he? Yeah. And ironically, that's how he got the injury.
True. Carnival Nation's been very. He's been talking about oxygen a lot in the chat. QQQ, he's put three Qs to make sure his question gets asked. Joe, I'll come to you on this one. Great, we are going for Cat 1. Do you think if we had already been Cat 1, we would have retained some of the youth players that are now at Man City, Arsenal, etc.?
You just don't know because there is a lot of transfers that go on between Cat 1 academies because these teams are still trying to poach the best players. And ultimately, if you've got the best players, the best teams want them and you struggle to keep hold of them. But it's more that you can get people in, sort of better players at a younger age and have them more for your system. And the longer you have them here, the better chance you've got of keeping them here because ultimately you can show them what they've got and try and set them pathways and go from there. But no, it just raises the standards required. Ultimately, if you get this and you're going into the under-18s and the 21s leagues, you need to be of a standard where you can compete with these teams because at the moment, these teams would hammer us every week. If we were playing Arsenal under-18s sort of week in, week out, it would be sort of 5-6-0, 7-0 games because they are that good and our levels have suffered because of that. So it's a real step up required, and it's going to be a real tough job for sort of Gary Probert and the academy recruitment guys to get some good enough players in early doors to try and help us bridge the gap to it before you can bring your other ones through.
Yeah, it does take a bit of time for bedding, doesn't it? Go on, Dave.
Wasn't there another rumour, I suppose, a rumour that we might be losing another one? So is it Rob Earnshaw? Rob Earnshaw's lad?
Man United?
Yeah, I think it's that somewhere. Sylvia Mexis.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
It's only a couple of years ago, but it is, Rob Earnshaw's son. But I think they've been based in like Shenfield, Brentwood, that sort of way.
Oh, okay.
But they're coming to Ipswich, but they're going to Manchester United. It's like, how can you compete when they're willing to move?
Yeah, you can't.
As a family, are willing to move to the other side of the country, effectively, for their son's football and education. And you can't, so you can't blame parents. They want the best for their children. And
of course,
that's what they think is the best. That's what they'll do. But yeah, this is the level you're talking now. You're not talking, oh, there's someone trying to move, or Norwich want to get him, West Ham want to get him. Any team in Europe will try and get these boys.
Yeah. Dave, we kind of alluded to this. Paul says it's a long way from here to the Cotswolds, isn't it? Marcus Evans. Think how many people have now got at least a decision-making role at the club. And rewind it back that 3 years when you basically had it was Marcus Evans and a few minions who were able to do a little bit.
Marcus Evans and a few minions. And if you go back to the Cotswolds, it was Bobby Robson. He ran the club from top to bottom they weren't really interested. You're right. It's come such well. It is a parallel universe compared to the Cotswold era. But yeah, it's come such a long way in the last 3 years since the Evans era. You're right. It seemed very almost a dictatorship under Evans, was it? So we understand. You know, staff were leaving. It was run on an absolute shoestring, wasn't it? So it's just much so different now.
And you can see, I guess we've made this point throughout, you can see why some people, particularly who've been around and experienced these kind of ownership changes, these regime changes, are a little bit apprehensive. Yeah, a lot more skeptical. People with skin in the game now, aren't they? And again, I guess the ORG controlling stake is important. Mark Ashton having such an important role gives a little bit of that, you know, consistency of how things have happened, because nothing really should change in terms of business as usual when everyone comes into work tomorrow, really, should it?
No, he shouldn't. I think it was just such a deep, you know, the club was horrible, wasn't it, 3 years ago under Evans? It was just a horrible, horrible place. So, you know, any takeover, anything, yes, it was, I don't know, at the time that people were treating it with scepticism. And Paul's comment there about the Cotswolds, you know, people were harping back, were sort of, you know, alluding back to those days. Well, you know, that's just, you know, that's clearly never not sustainable in the football world we live in now. So
certainly the top of the pyramid.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely not in the top. Yeah, absolutely not. So, I think these three years have been perhaps a little bit roller coaster at times, sort of first year 18 months, but since then just been absolutely incredible, hasn't it?
Yes. Let's do some random bits and pieces. I need to get Joe's opinion on Castor and Umbro, but the way into that is from Jack's question here. Does anyone know when Ed Sheeran's sponsorship runs out? I think he's extended it for one more year, but I don't know if that was this year or it's next year.
I think it's just a rolling year-to-year sponsorship.
Okay. I wonder whether that might change and whether Bright Path or others might have things in mind there. But Ed is a great ambassador for the club, isn't he? Great to have him involved, so it'd be good to see that continue. What is going to continue for one more year, though, Joe, very quickly, is Umbro manufacturing our kit. But after that, there's a little bit of uncertainty with Castor buying the license rights. Do you want to give your, I gave my thoughts on the pre-match show, but do you want to give your quick take on Castor and Umbro?
I've liked what we've had from Umbro so far. So it will be a shame if that relationship seems to be coming to an end, because they've done it there. Personally, I felt the Adidas kits were better quality, but we didn't have the design input into those, which maybe if we would now, maybe we're in a position where we would maybe get a bit more out of them. But from Castor, I know they had a bit of a disaster with the Aston Villa kit this year, one of the kits there, but I've got a couple of their kits just randomly from other bits, and I think it's always been really good quality stuff, and I've liked what I've seen from them. I've liked their designs, I've liked the quality, but it's expensive. Like their training kits,
it's premium, isn't it?
Other bits are expensive, and like the kits, like a Rangers kit or a Newcastle kit, is like £75 as opposed to £50. And like I said, I bought a Villa kit recently for someone, and it's all good quality, the stuff. But I just think they got the home kit wrong, badly wrong, and it just did not. It must have been the sort of technology and the science behind the actual kicks. It just wasn't wicking away sweat, and it looked like you'd had a bucket of water chucked on you, which I think the ladies' team were panicking about when they saw the men's in pre-season, and I think they managed to get it changed.
Yeah. We've got some revised maths. Reading Tractor says 2.6, 2.5 million, actually. And Elliot reporting, Forbes reported in 22-23, the Bournemouth were 20th in the Prem valuation at, that was euros, I think, 226 million euros. So there you go.
Exchange rate. At least double what Bournemouth are worth. Outfit on the South Coast.
There you go. Another random cue for, well, we'll put this to Joe because he was there last night, but both of you can answer this one. Leif Davis, better than Ben Chilwell?
Ben Chilwell is a really good player, but he didn't have his best game last night, but he's a really, really good player. And if Leif Davis can have as good a career as Ben Chilwell, I think he'll be very happy.
There you go. That's a very diplomatic answer.
Yeah, I'd go with that.
Trevor, also, we're talking about Wes Burns' injury. Need to remember that Burns also misses out on the Euros if Wales qualify. So you kind of have to feel sorry for that as well. Yeah. We are in extra added time. We'll keep going as long as there are bits and pieces for us to talk about in the chat. Got a mention of Paul Cook here from Cruncher 76. Congratulations to him getting Chesterfield back into the Football League. Morsy Burns, Chaplin Burgess, he's crediting Walton, I guess, as well.
There were some good, nice pictures on Instagram. Kieran Dyer. Bailey Clements, Kieran Dyer.
Dobra.
Young Dobbs, yeah. Good stuff. Yeah.
Interesting sliding doors, isn't it? That kind of situation there. You know, obviously the Paul Cook era didn't last too long, did it, after that. But yeah, fair play to Paul
Cook. On the way out.
I'm sorry to bring that one up, Joe. Yeah, well, I'm trying to find a positive to him with. Anyone got anything positive apart from we have made it an hour and 1 minute. Thank you, everyone who's joining the chat and got your questions in. We mentioned we'll be back for the pre-match show Wednesday. We might, you know, spring a surprise and stick something out maybe midweek as well. But I think probably Ben might have a live watch along for one of the international games. So worth doing that. But thank you, everyone, for your questions. Normal service resumes at the earlier day of Wednesday for the pre-match show, Friday for the live watch along for Blackburn. And then we are back here next Sunday, usual time, 8 p.m. Dave, thank you, as always, for your wisdom, Rich, your company yesterday as well. Joe, drilling through the academy stuff and the pie charts and Telegram and all that kind of great stuff as well. So thank you. If you haven't given us a thumbs up and a subscribe, do that before you go. And do so on your podcast app of choice. You can just press 5 stars and that means the world for us. But thank you everyone for the nice words in the chat as well. Anyone going to Blackburn? Either of you guys off to Blackburn?
Yeah, you should be. Yeah,
there you go. No, Dave. No,
good
not
Friday. Good Friday.
No, well, we're gonna talk about more ticket situation, I'm sure, with Coventry and others coming up in April. But yeah, it's getting real now, isn't it, guys? Last international break is done. Proper football back Wednesday. We've had a great show. Thank you, everyone, for getting involved. And do see us over on Telegram.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much-needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nugget and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Have a great week. We will see you all soon.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.